Welcome to Are You Quizzing Me? I am Vineet Nair with my co-host Aditya Kashyap. This is a quizzing trivia podcast show. Join us as we dive deep into history, science, pop culture, and so much more. Let's get quizzing. Welcome back to episode number 63 of Are You Quizzing Me? Your favorite quizzing and trivia podcast show. Aditya and I are back for another round of quizzing. And let's start off with the audience question. I will answer this question at the end of today's episode. Shani Shignapur is a village situated in the Nevasa Taluka in Ahmednagar district, Maharashtra. The village is known for its popular temple of Shani, the Hindu god associated with Saturn. The temple is believed to be a Jagrut Devasthan, meaning that a deity still resides in the temple icon. Villagers believe that, among many other things, Shani punishes anyone attempting theft. What is special about the houses in this village, which probably occurred as a direct consequence of this temple being there? I will answer this question at the end of today's episode. Now, we have to go to the particularly tricky question that Aditya had posed himself at the end of last week's episode. I am just waiting to see what answer he comes up for this one. So, over to you, Aditya.
So, in last week's episode, I had asked which Bollywood actors would be suitable for a role much like Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster, two roles that could perhaps be played by both of these actors. And I will expand the scope from just Bollywood actors to Indian actors, because I realized, firstly, the characters should be obviously Vikram and Betal.
Oh, okay.
Because that would be fun to watch. That's a genuine answer. But here is why these actors should be cast in it. Vikram should obviously be Kamal Hassan, because, well, he's already played Vikram. Betal should be Ajay Devgan, because that man doesn't have a lot of taal in his life. If you've ever seen Ajay Devgan dance, he doesn't have too good a sense of what taal and rhythm is. So that is what Vikram and Betal should be, and maybe they can switch around and see how that works.
I will agree, seriously speaking, that Kamal Hassan would make a great Betal and also a great Vikram. I mean, like, the guy can play practically any kind of role. He's a legend. But Ajay Devgan, Devgan
has played many historical characters, so he could play Vikramaditya, the legendary king.
Possible, but Betal, I don't know if he'll be able to pull out that kind of mad, manic energy that you would require for a Betal. He's been very sedate in the past few years. He plays quiet rage.
But if you've seen his dental state, he does have the teeth of a non-human entity.
What? I have never paid attention to his teeth. What is particular about his teeth?
I don't know why I'm throwing shade at Ajay Devgan. He probably...
You are so getting sued, by the way. Kajol is going to sue you into oblivion.
Yeah, she would. She would, yeah. I'm ruining my chances at the Bollywood career by doing this podcast.
Yeah. Wow. After that, I have no words. Let's move on to the quizzing portion of this podcast. So, I will start off this week's episode with a question on etymology. This was a TIL for me, so hopefully it's a TIL for you, but you never know. So, which, spelled as W-I-C-H, and which, spelled W-Y-C-H, are names associated, but not exclusively, with certain kinds of springs or wells in England. Originally derived from the Latin vicus, which is V-I-C-U-S, meaning place, by the 11th century, the use of the which suffix in a place name was associated with places with a specialized function that included the production of X. So, you know a lot of places which have which at the end. Some of them where the W is pronounced, some of them where the W is not pronounced. So, you have Greenwich, Ipswich, Norwich, Leftwich, Middlewich, Droitwich, Nantwich, so many, right? So, I want you to tell me what the production of what thing, X, is associated with these places historically that end with which or W-Y-C-H. I'm giving this. There are additional clues. I know it's a little difficult, but I will give additional clues if you are not able to crack it. I will focus one point on this, that I mentioned, the first thing I mentioned, that which are names associated not exclusively, but with certain kinds of springs or wells in England.
Oh, springs or well. So it's, is it some kind of a water that is specific to this place?
Indirectly, yes. But not the production. So think of that. That is where it starts from.
Yeah, I'm trying to think from a non-modern perspective. So something which could have been produced historically. Does it have anything to do with maybe hot water springs, which are very high in minerals? So maybe some sort of mineral or
you
rare?
Are not wrong. No, you're very close, but not wrong either. But you'll have to get a little more specific. If you want, I can give you a clue.
Yeah, give me a clue.
So, when Julius Caesar landed in Britain in 55 BC, he had found that Britons were extracting or producing eggs by pouring the water from the springs onto hot stones.
Okay. Salt?
Yes, you are right. It is salt. Oh. So, historically, the places which have witch at the end of it, like Greenwich, Ipswich and all, they have at some point or the other had salt springs. And now because most of these places, salt springs were used in the production of salt, many of these places which are ending up in which usually were involved historically in salt production. So you got that very quickly.
Fun question. All right. Since we were in the UK with that lovely question, thanks for that, Vineet, I'm going to move to another British export, I guess, and that would be the Spice Girls. Are you familiar with each of the Spice Girls, Vineet?
Oh, you're stretching my memory here. They have fallen out of relevancy, at least in my mind, for the past 25 years. So, but I know, I do remember there is Posh Spice, obviously, Victoria Beckham. Then there was Ginger Spice, Scary Spice, Sports Spice, Sporty Spice. Yeah.
Sporty Spice, Baby Spice, Ginger Spice, Scary Spice, Posh Spice.
Yes, okay, I mentioned Baby Spice. Yeah, okay.
Great, that is very impressive. I would not have been able to name so many. So, there is an actress currently working in Hollywood who credits her name as a reference or an homage to a Spice Girl. And the story goes, the legend goes, that when this actress went to register for the Screen Actors Guild, her birth name was already taken. She had a couple of options, but she decided to go with the word that was more comfortable and familiar to her. And she says that it was chosen in honor of one of the Spice Girls. So, do you know which Spice Girl and which Hollywood actress I'm referring to?
Okay, wait for the flex. And this is thanks to watching Graham Norton, one of my guilty pleasures. But this would be Emma Stone, who named herself after Emma Bunton, who I think is Baby Spice. Because her name was already taken. I don't remember what her name. I think her name was Emily, right? Her actual name is Emily.
And why are you even asking me? Just finish everything. Just tell me the rest of the questions I'm going to ask also. Yes, you are so bang on the mark. It's not even funny at this point. Emily Stone was already taken when Emma Stone, the actress as we know her today, went to register as a Screen Actors Guild. And she initially was considering going by either Riley Stone or Emily J. Stone, like Michael J. Fox.
Oh.
But decided eventually to go with Emma Stone in honor of Emma Bunton of the Spice Girls. You're right, Baby Spice. She has since said that she regrets taking on the name because nobody really refers to her as Emma Stone in her personal life or Emma in her personal life, which is also reminiscent of another Hollywood actress who isn't a big fan of her screen name because nobody really refers to her by that name. Do you know which actress it is?
Ooh, I don't know. Any other clues? Something that would give me in the ballpark?
She has the same name as William Shakespeare's wife.
Oh, this is Anne Hathaway.
Yeah. Anne Hathaway, also the name of William Shakespeare's wife. is technically not Anne Hathaway, wasn't born Anne Hathaway.
Oh.
But chose that name as her screen
name. I did not know that. I thought her name was, you know, she was called Anne Hathaway because Shakespeare's wife was. I thought that was just a naming thing that happened that was given to her by her parents. I did not know that she took that stage name. So what's her actual name?
So I believe that Anne Hathaway is the name that she goes by. I'm not sure if it is the name that she was given at birth or not.
Okay.
But she is referred to as Annie by everybody in her personal life. So she's not a big fan of the name Anne because nobody really calls her Anne. It's always Annie. But yeah, her name is Anne Hathaway and Jacqueline Hathaway, which is apparently named after Anne Hathaway from William Shakespeare's wife's fame, I guess.
Yeah. Just to make, I don't know if this can be a recommendation, but if you've never watched the Graham Norton show, this is to our audience in general, because I'm fairly sure Aditya must have. He is, I believe, the greatest living chat show host currently. Like, you can see a lot of chat show hosts, but nobody makes their guests as comfortable and their show as fun as Graham Norton. And particularly relating to this question, you can Google it on YouTube, basically. You can YouTube it. There is a very good clip, very funny clip, of Emma Stone freaking out when they tell her that a Spice Girl may be coming on the show. I won't spoil what exactly happens, but you really have to see it when she starts freaking out. She is such a huge fan.
I don't know how is it that he cracked this little key to making his episodes interesting of just inviting like four famous celebrities together.
Yeah.
And having them chat with each other and of course making them extremely comfortable and opening them up.
I think he's also the only chat show host which I can currently recall off the top of my head who gives alcohol regularly to his guests. Like they always have a drink in front of them.
That is true. Yeah.
There was a show where I think there was Bill Murray and Matt Damon, and they start just chugging down the drinks. And they're all tipsy by the end of the episode, but it was so much fun. He really makes it fun. There is no meanness, no mean-spiritedness to his jokes, to his questions. He's a good interviewer. He makes the audience comfortable. He makes the viewer comfortable. I seriously, honestly believe he's the best chat show host I've ever seen. Like, Oprah could learn a thing or two from him.
Those are fighting words.
Yeah, I stand by it.
But great, great question. I'll give you credit for that. Okay, speaking of...
I did not
of,
ask the question, by the way. That was you. This was your question. No, I agree. Right. It was a great question. I'm keeping this in.
Thing we just say at the segues of questions. Wow, okay. Well, I'm going to stop saying it now.
Yes. Hmm. Okay, so... Great question, Aditya. Okay, so this is my question. Let's go back to the periods of antiquity. X was one of the sons of Noah. You know Noah of the Ark? Noah from the Bible? Yes.
Sure.
Was one of the sons of Noah and is considered by many as his eldest son. Elam, Ashur, Aram, Arpashad, and Lud were his five sons. It is believed that these five sons were the progenitors of the nations of Elam, Assyria, Syria, Chaldea, and Lydia, respectively. Abraham, the patriarch of the Hebrews and Arabs, was one of the descendants of his son Arpashad. Now, X's name has given rise to a term which in linguistics and ethnology is used to denote a family of languages. The family includes the ancient and modern forms of Akkadian, Amharic, Arabic, Aramaic, Ge'ez, Hebrew, Maltese, Phoenician, Tigre, and Tigrinya, among others. What is the term? Either give me the name of the son or give me the term that arose from his name.
So this particular term is used to describe that family of languages, right?
It's used in linguistics and ethnology. So just to clarify to our audience... Ethnology is the study of characteristics of different peoples and the differences and relationships between them.
I do see the languages you mentioned being related to each other in just the terms of even the script and all looks kind of similar, especially Amharic and stuff. But I don't know what that family of languages is called.
Let me just clarify. I think I may have phrased it inaccurately. X is the son of Noah. Okay. Elam, Ashur, mm-hmm. Aram, Arpachshad, and Lud were his sons, Ex's sons, not Noah's sons.
Okay, got it.
So you can see that his sons were the progenitors of the nations of Elam, Assyria, Azria, Syria, Chaldea, Lydia. Abraham was again one of his descendants. And his name was given rise to a term which in linguistics and ethnology, and it's a very commonly known term, very politically charged term nowadays.
Oh,
in the 20th century, actually throughout history.
Interesting. Nowadays, politically charged, the languages and region you mentioned, I'm going to take a guess it has something to do with Judaism, Jewish people,
yes.
Israel.
Follow that train of thought. What name would you give to these languages? Akkadian, Amharic, Arabic, Aramaic, Hebrew, Maltese, Phoenician. These all belong to what group of languages? That is one way to get it. But you can also use that same term for a group of people. Hence, I mentioned ethnology.
Because of the group of people, because I don't know what the family of languages is called, I'm going to go with the group of people. Does it have anything to do with Semitism or Semite?
Very good. It is Semitic. These are Semitic languages. And the son of Noah was called Shem. Even Arabic is derived from the group of languages that are called Semitic languages, which I don't think will go down well with a lot of people.
Yeah, Arabic is a Semitic language.
Yeah, apparently so. It's anyway, it's a term used to describe it. But yeah, so the son of Noah, Shem, from his name we get the term Semitic. His descendant Abraham is the patriarch of both Hebrews and Arabs. So, if I remember correctly, Hebrews from Abraham's wife, you get the Jews, and from Abraham's mistress, you get the Arabs. Or I think it's the other way around. But he is the patriarch of both Arabs and Jews.
Interesting. Well, that is a pretty cool piece of trivia. No, for sure. Okay. All right. I'm going to move from this family of languages to a family of... You know what? I just realized I just said that it's a great question, and I'm going to take that back because I promised myself I won't do that anymore. So instead, I want to say that was a great answer. Kudos to me.
Yes, kudos to you.
I'm amazing.
Yes, yes.
So moving from that family of languages, I'm going to move to a family of films, which is another way of saying I'm asking you a listicle question.
Oh, again. God, I hate your lists. Listen to last week's episode if you haven't, where he gave me a list where there was... the Atlantic Ocean, a tree, a star, and a planet, and ask me what's common between those things. The answer was amazing. If you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to it. But yeah, so you know, you can see what I'm up against when it comes to his lists.
Oh, this one is going to be probably even more confounding. All right, let's start. We're going to go with Enchanted. So I'm picking the movies from this list. It's a non-exhaustive list. I'm picking the movies from this list that... are the most famous.
Okay.
Enchanted.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Okay.
Life of Pi.
Okay.
Boogie Nights.
Okay.
Kill Bill Volume 2.
Okay.
Catch Me If You Can.
Okay.
The Incredibles. 500 Days of Summer. Argo. And the last one I'm going to mention, The Grand Budapest Hotel.
These are all movies based out of books or graphic novels?
No, that would be...
No, I was going to... Until you said Kill Bill, I was fairly confident the others would be, because Scott Pilgrim is based off a comic, Life of Pi is based off a novel.
True. But no.
Not a novel, it's
considering how many screenplays are adapted.
These are not adapted screenplays. Okay. Wow, 500 Days of Summer. That's the one with Zoe Deschanel and... what's his face? Robin.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt,
yeah.
Robin of all the characters that Joseph Gordon-Levitt has played.
Yeah, wow. No, but to be honest, yes. How many characters of Joseph Gordon-Levitt do you kind of remember?
By name, probably not a lot. Yeah. Right, yeah. But I do remember Don John, I think that was there.
One movie. Not a great... I'm not a big fan of that movie. Looper was another great film of his, but I cannot...
Looper was...
Yes, but I cannot remember the name of his character from that. Hmm. That's the thing. He plays great roles. Yeah. He doesn't play great characters. Like, you remember him from Inception. What was the name of his character in Inception?
I wouldn't be able to tell you if you put a gun to my head. Or
exactly. Same thing. Neither can I remember. So that's what I'm saying. So enough shade to Joseph Gordon-Levitt. But wow. Okay. What do all these movies have in common? And it's a non-exhaustive list you mentioned, right? And they're pretty great movies, most of them. Argo, Grand Budapest Hotel, beautiful film. Is it a person who is common to all of them?
No.
No. Okay, I need a clue.
I could give you more movies. There's Conjuring. There is Wolf of Wall Street. There's The Sting. Nice Guys. The 1991 film JFK. There are a bunch of films that would fit this list and this criteria. But instead of giving you more, which perhaps might not lead you to the answer, I'm going to say that they are all similar, except for Grand Budapest Hotel, which fits the list for sure, fits the criteria. But is the only one, or at least the only one that I know, that goes beyond. So if there is something that is quirky or unique about these films, Grand Budapest Hotel takes it to the next level.
For a second, I was thinking it might be a narrator, but no, The Sting doesn't have a narrator, neither does Argo. Wow.
So this is a technical, let's say, unique feature.
Were these all shot on film? No, but then that'll be too long a list, right?
That will also be a very long list because most movies were shot on film till very recently. And more importantly, we are looking at something that is unique to them, that is in the technical space. But you're right, it is along those lines. It is along the lines of how it was shot, and how it is seen. Let's put it both ways.
So is it like the aspect ratio in which they were shot or at least presented or something like that?
You are very, very close. Can you tell me what about the aspect ratio was unique to these films?
Wait, are these where they're shot in multiple aspect ratios?
Hey, lovely. Yes, that is the answer to this question. These are films that were shot on more than one aspect ratio. So I mentioned a bunch of these films.
The Dark Knight would be there. Most of Christopher Nolan's movies would be there.
Dark Knight does change aspect ratios. Yes, you're right. So, like, say, Enchanted, that was shot on 2.35:1 and 1.85:1. So, multiple aspect ratios just like that. And here's where it gets interesting, because there are most of these films that I mentioned have two sets of aspect ratios. The Grand Budapest Hotel has three. And actually, there are a few more on that list of three. Galaxy Quest is also three. Life of Pi is also three. But most of them are two aspect ratios. So, yeah, these are films that were shot in more than one aspect ratio. That is the list.
Yes, I mean, like, if the Dark Knight or the Dark Knight Rises had been on it, I would have gotten it, because Nolan tends to shoot his conversations and other scenes in 2.35:1, and then he shifts it to 1.8:1 where the IMAX aspect ratio when he wants to shoot his action film, action sequences.
Which in this case of Oppenheimer, he shot even his close-ups and his conversations with an IMAX camera.
No, but that makes a huge difference. Like, you're such a huge camera, so close up to Cillian Murphy's face. Wow.
Honestly, he deserved an Oscar just for that. Just for the fact that he acted with that big-ass camera in his face.
Seriously. Okay, so great questions. So I still say that I hate listicle questions. So that's going to remain the same. But something related to movies and politics is my next question. Have you heard of Grigoris Lambrakis?
Yeah. We hang out every Sunday. We get some idli dosa in the morning together.
Great. So then this should be very easy for you. Grigoris Lambrakis was a member of the Greek resistance to Axis rule during World War II. He later became a prominent anti-war activist. On 22nd May 1963, shortly after he had delivered the keynote speech at an anti-war meeting in Thessaloniki, two far-right extremists driving a three-wheeled vehicle struck Lambrakis with a club over the head in plain view of a large number of people and some police officers. He suffered brain injuries and died in the hospital 5 days later. His death triggered wide protests and resulted in the resignation of Prime Minister Konstantinos Karamanlis. These events inspired the author Vasilis Vasilikos to write the political novel Z, as in the letter Z. In 1969, Greek-French film director Costa Gavras made the film Z, which was based on the novel and a great success. Which Indian film was a remake of the movie Z and the real-life assassination of Lambrakis?
Ooh, interesting. But was there a actual Indian figure who was assassinated and they...
No, so they've just taken the story and adapted it to the Indian context with fictionalized characters.
Okay.
So in the movie, in the Indian movie, the assassination happens very similar to what I've just described happened to Lambrakis. That he finished a speech and people driving a vehicle struck him over the club with a head in the plain view of a large number of people and even some police officers.
I think it's funny that you just said, struck him over the club with a head.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I don't know. But... struck him with a club over the head. Let me... rephrase that.
You again said struck him over the club with the head.
Struck him with a club over the head. With this, I am saying struck him with a club over the head, right?
Oh, yeah. Correct, correct, correct. Yeah, you're right. Okay, somehow, and this would be damning to my credits as a movie lover, I have not seen this film, but I don't know why. I feel like it might be the answer. Is it the movie Yuva?
No, not Yuva. Yuva is based off the real life killing, but it's not described on the in the movie itself. The real life killing of a trade union, not a trade union, a kind of left leaning student leader in, I think it is Osmania University in Hyderabad.
Okay,
it happened in the 80s or something, and I think the character played by Surya in Ayudharita, which is the Tamil version. It was a bilingual film, right? And Ajay Devgan, I think that character was based off this student leader. His name, I remember, was George something, but he was killed during that. But in the movie, obviously, it's not based. They don't show him dying, obviously.
Okay. No, then I don't have any such clue right now. Can you tell me which... are we talking about a Bollywood film?
It is a Bollywood film.
That's kind of you, because I would struggle with other... language films in India. So Bollywood, I might have seen it, but I'm not, it's not ringing any bells right now.
So I would give you a clue with the star cast of the film, which included Abhay Deol.
Oh, okay.
Kalki Kaklan.
Okay.
And Imran Hashmi.
What?
In what I consider to be Imran Hashmi's best role till date.
Ooh. That is that. Those are fighting words as well. But before we get to that, wow, Abhay Deol and Imran Hashmi together. Oh, I think I know this film.
It's a great film. It's one of my. It's one of my the films which I just love to rewatch.
I don't think I've seen this, but it rings a bell. No, I'm lost, and I'm pretty sure I've not seen this film, but I might have heard of it.
Dibakar Banerjee, director.
Oh, I've definitely heard of this film, but I don't think I've seen it. No, Vineeth, you'll have to put me out of my misery.
Okay, so the movie was called Shanghai.
Yes, of course, yeah.
It was directed by Dibakar Banerjee. And it was not a great hit. It was a commercial failure. But I still consider it one of the better films to come out of the early 2000s. Imran Hashmi, definitely. I don't think he's played any role with this much commitment after that, because he usually plays himself most of the time. It's very difficult to differentiate between Imran Hashmi characters, because they all have that same cadence, they all have the same look, they all do the same thing, they all have the same type of Sufi inspired songs. So it's very difficult to differentiate Imran Hashmi characters. But if you watch Shanghai, you'll never forget Imran Hashmi in that.
No, I think Imran Hashmi is an underrated actor. Abhay Deol is definitely an underrated and a very, very good actor. All of them, actually. Kalki, Imran Hashmi, and Abhay, all great actors. My favorite Imran Hashmi film, though, and this could be considered one of the pop culture recommendations, take it with a grain of salt. It's bordering on a guilty pleasure. It is Awarapan. And I love that film.
I have not watched Awarapan.
Well, watch it at your own risk. Don't come at me if you don't like it later. Most other recommendations I stand by. This one, I would go as far as saying it is one of my favorite films. But and not just Imran Hashmi, it is actually one of my just favorite films. But it probably is something more to do with me than the film itself. So, yeah.
So, coming back to Shanghai, it's a wonderful film. The one gripe I would have with it is that they cast Ajay Deol to play a South Indian named T.A. Krishnan.
You mean Abhay Deol?
Abhay Deol. The most... Abhay Deol, from the most Punjabi of families, to play T.A. Krishnan, a Tamilian IAS officer. And there is a small portion where he speaks Tamil, which is atrocious, to say the least. But apart from that, his acting is fantastic because most of it does not involve his identity. I don't know why they made him a South Indian. It's just they could have easily made him a North Indian and still had the same essence of the character. But I looked it up in the meantime. The student activist or student leader that we were talking about on whom Yuva was based is George Reddy.
Okay.
So I remember his first name, right? His name is George Reddy. Again, he was a PhD student. He was a gold medalist in nuclear physics at Osmania University in Hyderabad.
Wow.
And he died of a stabbing at the age of 25 in Hyderabad in 1972.
Okay.
So, I think, if I remember correctly, Ajay Devgan's character, yes, Ajay Devgan and Surya's character were based off his real life activism.
Oh, okay.
Again, to paraphrase you, that was a great question. So, Aditya, what's yours next?
Okay, that was, I'm not going to say a great question, but I won't say that. That was a great film. Shanghai is a great film.
Yeah.
So, I have not
watched. And so is Yuva, by the way.
Both films that are great and I have not watched. So, I have to watch both of these. Okay. Here's my next question. Speaking of films, I'm going to speak about actually a painting. And let me describe this painting to you. Tell me how it is relevant to the world of arts and entertainment. Okay. Francis Barrard was a Liverpoolian painter who had a brother named Mark. In the late 1800s, in the late 19th century, after Mark died, Francis inherited a bunch of his stuff, which also included Mark's dog, a fox terrier named Nipper. Now, whenever Francis played the records of his dead brother's voice on a phonograph, which is also one thing he inherited, he realized the dog would listen intently. Francis thought this was beautiful and decided to paint it. How is this relevant to the world of arts and entertainment, Vineet?
This would be the origin of HMV. His master's voice. Hello, can you hear me?
No, I don't want to respond.
Okay, for a second I thought the internet had gone on the fritz.
Even if the internet ever goes down, Vineet, we can all just rely on you to give us all the answers we need, because that was ridiculously fast. I tried to make that vague. I tried to... God damn it. That was so quick. Okay. Yes. You are right. So, it is HMV, which is his master's voice, which is the name of the painting that he gave, which I thought is a very lovely, cute name, that his master's voice was what used to get the dog listening intently every time he heard it on the phonograph. HMV decided to adopt that and eventually made it its logo and I guess its name as well, which is, by the way, a major British record label created in 1901 by the Gramophone Company Limited. Do you know what shape it took in the US?
No, I'm not aware.
So there was an American recording company and a phonograph manufacturer called the Victor Talking Machine.
Okay. VTM.
This was founded by somebody called Eldridge Johnson, And I'll just give this as additional trivia. The name Victor, nobody's quite sure where it comes from. There were a couple of accounts. The first one is that he wanted it to sound close to victory. The other is the fact that Johnson emerged as the victor from the lengthy and costly patent litigations involving some other gramophone companies. There's another story about how it could be named after the popular Victor bicycle or from his wife's name, Victoria. So multiple things. But Victor Talking Machine Company was later acquired by Radio Corporation of America, RCA. Mm. RCA Records has the same logo of a dog listening to a gramophone, which is also the HMV logo. And that's how people in the US would know that particular logo or that particular painting. Do you know how this is relevant in Japan?
Oh, absolutely no clue. Wait, is it something to do with that dog, Hibachi?
Did you say Hibachi?
Okay, you forgot. This is when you asked that same question for uh-huh. Hachiko, I had I couldn't remember the name. I just remembered it was H something, and I said Hibachi, and you found that hilarious.
Oh yes, I found that hilarious again just now. Oh, some jokes never get old, yes. Hachiko. No, that is not Hachiko. But think of a Japanese brand which has something to do with Victor.
A Japanese brand which has something to do with Victor. Mm-hmm. My track record with Japanese brands have been abysmal. If you listen to the episode where we had the car manufacturer question.
Yeah, that's true.
Victor. Nope. Nothing comes to mind.
What about the letters J, V, and C?
JVC. Oh, okay. The Japanese Victor Company.
Japan Victor Company. Yes, that is how JVC gets its name.
I had a JVC, you know, one of those small tape recorders with just one cassette and a radio. That was my standby for 3-4 years when I was a kid. I used to turn that on and listen to music while I was studying. As one of those weird types, I just had to have some kind of music in the background. So my dad bought me a JVC. And up until this point, I did not make that connection that JVC could stand for something. It just was JVC in my mind all the time.
JVC, yeah. JVC, Japan Victor Company. Victor was the gramophone company, which later became RCA. And RCA's logo, obviously, is the same as HMV in the UK, which is his master's voice. And it all comes from that one single painting created by this painter when his brother died, and he inherited the brother's gramophone and the brother's dog. So whenever he played his brother's voice, the dog would go running over and want to listen to it. And he painted that.
That's very sweet.
Yeah. A bunch of trivia associated to that one painting.
Nice. I believe that's all the time we have for today's episode. Before we wind up, there is the matter of the question for next week that Aditya will now ask. So Aditya, what question? And let me just clarify to anybody listening to our podcast for the same time. If you did not understand it from the intro to the episode, this is not a serious question. This is Aditya flexing his improv chops.
Hey, if you can come at me with instant answers like HMV and Emma Stone, I think I am allowed this luxury also. Okay. So the question I'm going to ask is not directly related to any of the questions we asked, but indirectly related, because you told me about the movie Yuva and George Reddy and his unfortunate demise at a young age. So my question then is, the people he inspired, what are they truly fighting for?
Ooh, dangerous question. But we shall find out at the next episode.
Yes.
So that was a great episode, and now we have to come back to the audience question which I asked at the beginning of today's episode. So the question that I had asked was regarding the village called Shani Shignapur in Nevasa Taluk in Ahmednagar district, Maharashtra, India. The village is known for its popular temple of Shani, the Hindu god associated with Saturn. The temple is believed to be a Jagrat Devasthan, meaning that a deity still resides in the temple icon. Villagers believe that Shani, among many other things, punishes anyone attempting theft. What is special about the houses in this village, which probably occurred as a direct consequence of this temple being there? Aditya, any clues? Any ideas?
I'm going to give a shout out to my dad, who is one of our regular listeners.
Oh.
And this piece of trivia, out of all the trivia that we have done so far on this show, I think is the first piece of trivia I remember. And it was my dad who told me that Shani Shignapur is famous because there are no doors in this town.
Exactly.
Since there are no thefts, apparently, in this town.
Yeah. So the people there believe that anyone attempting theft or performing theft would be punished by the deity Shani. And so they are so confident against theft that none of the houses have any doors. Which I think is not great when it comes to the fact we are facing global warming right now. I don't know what the climate in Shani Shignapur is like, but yeah, some doors and windows I think are warranted. But anyway, to each his own. Aditya, what's your pop culture recommendation for this week?
We did mention a bunch of movies, so I would love to give a shout out to those movies again. Even though I haven't watched some of them, I know they're great and I'm going to watch them soon. So hopefully by the time this episode is out, this would be a personal recommendation. So Yuva and Shanghai Avarapan, if you want to go for it, I love it. So watch it as Aditya's favorite film, not necessarily a great film in and of itself. Apart from that, I would also love to give a shout out to, since we're talking about slightly older Bollywood films, this movie Korn. Now, Korn is...
Yes, I am so totally on board with this. I am one of the few people who's been proselytizing about Korn. It was peak Raj Gopal Varma. Ram Gopal Varma. Peak Ram Gopal Varma. But please continue. I got excited.
Oh, no, that is very valid excitement because the people who have recommended it to me told me about it very excitedly and I watched it recently. And once I watched it, I was blown away by it. So I would say, yeah, watch a movie Korn. It might seem a little predictable, but you have to take into account the fact that this movie is more than 20 years old. Usually when these movies seem predictable, it's probably because those tropes have been reused since then. But I can imagine when it came out, it would have been absolutely mind-numbingly amazing. And it holds up, even if you can predict where it's going, it still holds up. The acting is phenomenal. It has Manoj Bajpayee, it has Urmila Matondkar, it has some great actors and some decent direction, yeah.
I watched it a few months after it came out on VHS in the same year that it released and it just blew me away.
Oh.
I remember thinking of the climax and I was like, this is a fantastic film. And I've kept recommending it to people, but not many people have even heard of Korn. It's not one of Ram Gopal Varma's more known works.
I'm going to name drop here a little bit because the person who recommended it to me is also somebody who can be a pop culture recommendation in and of herself, is Srushti Tavde, who is a famous Indian rapper who happens to be a friend. And she recommended it to me and made sure that I watched it and I loved it. So another recommendation, go check out Srushti's work. Some really great rap.
Nice. I haven't personally listened to us, but now I will, given that she's also a friend. That's your recommendation. My recommendation is the same. Ours overlap because I was going to recommend Yuva and Shanghai. Both great pieces of work. I would also recommend on Netflix, there is a show called Judge D Mysteries.
Okay.
Okay, so it's called The Judge D Mysteries. It's a Chinese show. Okay. It's a Chinese show. It's in China. The production value is insane. And Judge D himself is a character from Chinese history. If I remember correctly, it was a German or some European guy, I don't remember his name right now, who came across these stories, translated them from Chinese, and then liked the character so much that he started writing stories based on that character.
Okay.
So this was one of the first or earliest forms of cultural appropriation. There are a couple of Judge D movies also which had come in the past, Chinese movies which were a trilogy. It's good entertainment. It's a little predictable, but the production value is just insane. Beautiful to watch. So, Judge D Mysteries.
Awesome. Okay.
That is all we have time for this episode. Thank you all for listening in. We hope that you enjoyed the show and learned something new. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to our podcast. Leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Take 2 seconds after the spiel to give us a 5-star review and hit the subscribe and follow button. It helps us reach a wider audience, allows more people to discover and enjoy the show. We'd also love to hear from you. Feedback, suggestions, even trivia. You can send us questions that you want asked on the show. Just send us an email at areyouquizzingme@gmail.com with the name of the quizmaster who you want to ask the question in the subject line. You can also reach out to us and post questions, trivia, whatever you want on our subreddit, which is r/areyouquizzingme. You can reach us on Instagram at areyouquizzingme. We appreciate your support and look forward to sharing more episodes with you in the future. Thank you guys for tuning in and have a great day.
See you guys next week.